Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
This is the April 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Ginder. He's from SC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri. Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois is here, along with Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. And our guest today, Sean Maurer of Northern Country Cooperative out of Stacyville, Iowa. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, let's start, as usual, by getting a list of topics we should discuss from our panelists. Greg Ginder, let's start with you. What's on your mind this week?
Sure. Thanks, Todd. I've been running the 17-18 balance sheets, or at least what I'm kind of looking at, using the planted acres forecast from the USDA and just kind of extrapolating the production and usage, trying to figure out where our carryout's going to look like on corn and beans here this year. So I found some interesting numbers.
Oh, we will definitely want to hear about that. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, out of Normal?
Oh, probably weather and market direction. That's going to be the main feature for quite some time. But more interesting, Sean's comments on cash grain movement through Iowa and the upper northwest, and also sort of planting progress reports from his areas there.
We will get to those, absolutely. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I would second that with obviously the weather being a big impact here for the next couple of weeks, as well as the speculative and fund community already being short. How much do they want to press that into a very uncertain growing season coming up the next couple of months?
And Sean Maurer from Northern Country Co-op, rather than having you give me a list of items, why don't you tell me just a little bit about Northern Country Co-op and where it's located and what you do?
Yes, I'm the grain merchandiser for Northern Country Co-op. Our main office is in Stacyville, Iowa. We have two locations in Iowa, and then we have 10 locations in Minnesota. We have storage capacity of about 15 million bushels.
And you are also serviced by a couple of rail lines. So you're working off of two different rail lines. And where do they go? And
yes, that's right. Our two locations in Iowa, we're serviced by the CN, the Canadian National, which a lot of our hauls ends up down on the Mississippi River. And then three of our Minnesota locations are serviced by the CP, which is the Canadian Pacific Railway.
And we would think here of that heading towards the PNW, but you don't go all the way out there.
No, most of that gets into Iowa, into the local ethanol markets, or into Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about what's been happening up there. First, to get right to the point, have producers planted very much corn, if any at all?
Very little. I would say probably about 5%. It's mostly been the larger producers who have been out planting corn. Pretty much all the anhydrous has been on, and like today we are spreading some dry fertilizer. But most of the guys with the cool weather and the wetness are holding off.
Now, here we had quite a bit of heat throughout the winter and the spring, and I'll call it heat because it was very warm. Was that different for you?
No, it's been kind of running a warmer spring, but we've been on the wet side too. In fact, this morning, our Alden, Minnesota location had a dusting of snow and got the ground all white.
And you have low temperatures like what this week?
Today is probably the coldest. It's supposed to get to maybe 40 degrees.
For the high. Oh, wow.
For a high, so, yeah. Yep.
So that's pretty cold. I don't know how typical that is at this time of year for you.
It's not very typical, no. I think the average high is in the low 60s.
I would think farmers are probably pretty grumpy by this point.
Yeah, they're pretty quiet.
Well, they're quiet. And are they quiet because they have a lot of grain in storage? You should have good handle on that.
Yes, yeah. Most of their elevators are full. I mean, we've got room to take some corn, but farmers out in the country, they've got a lot in their bins yet of corn.
Have you got a lot of unsold corn in the elevator and then, of course, on the farm too? How much in total do you think?
Oh, I'm thinking the farmers are probably sitting on about 60-65% of last year's corn.
What does this mean for your basis?
You know, right now, basis has been coming together just because the processors are needing corn and are having a hard time sourcing it. So basis has shown some signs of improving.
Okay, so let me turn to the rest of you. Kurt Kimmel, what'd you glean out of that helps you think about marketing across the whole of the United States, or that might be new information that gives you an idea of where the market might be headed?
Well, just signals that we've got plenty of cash grain out, or corn that is, to move out there yet. Seems like, you know, around the ethanol plants, it's moved a little bit more because, you know, they're continuing to need some inventory to work with. But that's probably what's going to limit, you know, some rallies down the road here as cash grain begins to move. Typically, once the producer gets his crop in the ground and there's no real weather concern, that's when things cut loose. And I notice our basis here locally, it kind of falls off the cliff once we start getting into July, particularly beans. And so it's going to be some tough going here to try to get caught up on some cash sales for guys that continue to hang on to some bull crop inventory.
You have suggestions for them, and I know that'll vary by the individual, but is there something they should be watching for in particular?
Well, it feels like an old-fashioned type of weather playing through here. You get a little weather marker here in the spring, a little planting concerns. Then once the crop gets to the ground, you maybe move lower into June and then see if the hot, dry weather comes along. So we kind of feel the best opportunities here in the next week or two to sort of get caught up to where you want to be. We think holding cash grain could be a toxic situation if weather doesn't develop down the road. So we like transferring ownership to paper where you got a lot more flexibility, and there's some creative strategies out there where you can move your cash grain, get your money, pay your bills, and re-own it with anywhere from 10 to 15 cents risk between now and next fall.
Wait, so you're thinking that we are trading up on the upper end of the range for corn, that producers ought to take advantage of that some point while they're not in the field planting and move a little corn if they can?
Well, currently I think we're kind of the lower end of the range. I feel, you know, if we could get the funds to cover some shorts, month end's just about over with here, but if we can see some short covering, well, more weather concerns, that we can maybe see 15, 20 cents up and any type of move like that, I think, needs to be rewarded.
Chip Nellinger, what do you think?
Well, I think we're set up for the potential for some really choppy markets. Based on some of the comments, a little bit surprised in that Northwest Corn Belt area that there's that much cash corn remaining unpriced. I would say in the Eastern Corn Belt, we're probably not that high. Producers, and probably because basis was a little bit better, producers, I think, did a better job in the Eastern Corn Belt cleaning stuff up. Still a lot of old crop, don't get me wrong, but I don't think we're up at the 60-65% left unpriced range. But still a lot of overhead supply on rallies, but with lower acres, and we're kind of struggling with some cool, wet weather here. In my mind, it raises the bar higher on producing another, third in a row, big crop nationally. So, you know, if you do see fears along the way of yield becoming a sub-trend line, with the funds already short, you could see some explosive moves higher. However, as it was stated earlier, that big supply of farmer old crop corn, as well as the willingness of the funds to get a big short position put together, could lead to some downside as well. So I think there's as much risk as there has been in many years here, and it's going to require sharp pencils and a definite plan of action, probably written and followed closely over the next 3 or 4 months here as we get into summer.
Greg Ginder, does the amount of corn left in the ownership of the farmers' hands mean that basis will not follow moves up as much as producers might like or might even think would happen?
Well, I assume it would depend on the type of tidal wave of grain that we hit. If we show $3.90 or a $4 on the board, St. Louis is paying about 14 over for April or May corn delivered. So, and it does, like everybody else says, it drops off when you get to that June, July period. That's the big question. That's what all the basis traders are kind of wondering, where the tidal wave starts and how big it is. My guess is I think it's going to be rather large because there's still, in my opinion, also quite a bit of corn to move. I would say there could be as much as 50% farmer ownership that's still in this St. Louis area down around here. So, and that's quite a bit for this time of year. As far as up there, it seems really interesting to me that the river values are pretty good. So it tells me there isn't a whole lot of grain moving because the pipeline is not as thick as we would like at this time of year. So I would think a pretty good amount of farmers selling would put some pressure on this basis.
Where do you think that will come? At what price tag will producers go ahead and dump?
We've been kicking this idea around for a while. I mean, obviously we're going to start working off of July now, so we kind of got to equate it back to, you know, spread wise versus the May, but versus the July, I think we're getting close. We're getting to the point where the farmers are definitely paying attention. I mean, a lot of them down in this area specifically are pretty well along on their corn plantings. You know, they're on the backside of it. So now they're starting to look at the prices of things because they've gotten in the field well. They've gotten good rains. But I would say, you know, the $3.85 July is really attractive. That would put $4 cash in St. Louis. And I think every nickel from there, we see quite a bit of country selling.
Sean, quick question going back to some history. We believe, but we're not certain, that sometimes the farmers, and this is a little out of your area, but the Minnesota-Dakota farmers are more prone to store not one, but sometimes two and maybe more years. Do they actually have that much storage, and will they do it?
I think some farmers will. And I know in the elevator here, we've got guys that have 2 years crop that they're sitting on.
Holy smokes. I guess that's in the elevator surprises the devil out of me. Does that happen very often?
Occasionally.
Interesting. What do you think about the price tag it'll take to get things to move?
I think, you know, if we see that another 20 cents up, we get that July futures up around that, you know, $4 futures, I think that would encourage some of these guys to start moving some of it.
Greg Ginder, you mentioned that you had started to work with the 17-18 balance sheets just a bit, trying to figure out what carryouts will be. Can we start with corn and what your numbers look like?
Absolutely. Well, just to, on as a side note here, I'm being a little conservative with my usage and the yield. I'm using the 90 corn planted acres, 170 yield, and 14.5 on the usage. You know, you look at about an 83 harvested just from general trend. And if you take the 232 carryout from the report in April, it does put you at about a 193 carryout for next year, which, again, I think a 170 yield is a little stemmy because I don't know if we can hit the trend line, but that is definitely going to be, in my opinion, somewhere around that area where the government's going to land at on trend line. And the usage, I took a couple hundred thousand usage off of there just in case, you know, the river or ethanol was to back off a little bit. But, I mean, we're still right at or just underneath a 2 billion carryout, which I think is encouraging.
Did you put a price tag for the season's average cash price on that too?
Oh, wow. Pin me down.
Well, USDA is going to give us one in May because that's the first time they'll have their numbers out. We're not that far away, so let's see what you've got.
I would certainly say that it moves the trading ranges up. I would really like to believe that that puts us at a four, somewhere between 4 and 4.25. I would like to believe on average, the marketing year, I would say 4, 4.25 would be a generous estimate.
How about you, Kurt? You were laughing about that one. Where do you stand?
I think he's on there. The a lot of analysts are moving demand lower, and I think, you know, overall demand is going to stay relatively strong. The thing that's going to move the bottom line more than anything is the yield, of course, and we could be in this 1.9 to 2.1 area for quite some time. But, you know, with the fund short and we run into some weather and stuff, it sets the stage to, you know, see some $4-plus corn. But this bullishness might not happen until we get into next winter or even next spring. As we clean up this old crop, then we watch the South American weather materialize and might see some price increase opportunities after the crop's put away this fall.
That reminds me, the South American part, that is Chip Nellinger, that there is a second crop, Brazil corn crop, that is in the middle of its season. And Drew Lerner told us on the air for the closing market report Wednesday, it was in perfect condition at this point, unlike last year, which was really the driving force behind a good part of the move in the corn market last summer. This time around, they'll have a corn crop, apparently, if it comes to fruition, really to sell. And we'll have a lot of a corn crop left to sell in the United States. Does that make things worse as we look into that July timeframe?
Yeah, it could. I think the previous segment there about the potential carryout and this issue kind of go hand in hand. And I do think that the market's expecting much better corn production out of the Southern Hemisphere than we saw a year ago. I think that's part of the reason that corn's been a little bit reluctant to rally here. They're factoring that in. They know that's going to be there. But if we back up a step, you know, and say, well, we got pretty good demand, and we know the acres, at least as of the March 31st acreage report, if we ever get to a spot where the market fears a sub-trend line yield, if you plug in just conservatively a 160 yield in there, which is still going to be a top five crop we've ever raised on the current demand and current acres, all of a sudden, you're not talking about 2+ billion bushel carry anymore. You're talking about something closer to 1 billion bushel carryout. And that'll get the market's attention, but it definitely is going to take some sort of a flare-up in weather or a hot dry streak happening around pollination, grain fill, some sort of a spark to do that. And so it goes back to one of my initial comments there. I think there's a potential here, especially with the fact that the funds are proven they'll put big positions on, and they're not really biased whether it's long or short. They just want a market to move. We could see some big swings here, and I think that's going to be a change. You know, the corn market's kind of put people to sleep for like the last 10 months here, just kind of in a pretty narrow range, and we're not used to that the last few years, and it's easy to just kind of forget about the markets a little bit. But I think we're going to have to really keep our finger on the trigger here because there could be some much bigger swings, higher and lower. I'm not saying it's going to be one-sided to the upside. I think that we're setting ourselves up for the fact that if we produce a crop, absolutely, we're going to be bordering too many stocks in the world. But if we have a sub-trend line yield this year nationally, all of a sudden that carryout situation looks a lot different, a lot tighter.
Anything under 1.5 adds a measure of volatility that just can't be measured.
Sean Maurer, when you talk to producers in your area and they're thinking about, and I'll bet they do, either a really big crop or a really short crop, either one, and they begin to bet on that, and they have a whole bunch that's in the elevator in the bin, and you know about it, what do you tell them about marketing, the differences between marketing the old and the new crop?
You know, look at where your break even is on the new crop stuff, and, you know, if you show a profit, start making sales for the new crop, And then on the old crop, you know, they know what, kind of the same thing. They know where their break even is. So anytime they can show a profit to go ahead and pull the trigger.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about soybean then. What do we know about this market at this time, Greg Ginder, as it relates to the South American crop, Brazil and Argentina both, and how that might play into the U.S. crop, which is going to be, at least on the acreage side, a really big this one year by USDA's numbers?
Oh, certainly. Well, I would say in terms of the South American crop, I think we've seen another great crop down there. I mean, no, there's no doubt about it. And all the demand has, for the most part, except for some domestic and some Caribbean, Latin American cargoes, has moved into the South American market. But looking at if you use the 89 planted that the government gave us, and I'm kind of rounding down to 89. I'm curious to see what everybody would use as a yield, because I kind of struggled with this, but erring on the side of conservative, you would say probably the government being the conservatives that they are would be a 50 yield, maybe a 49 and a half, but certainly somewhere near or around 50. That gives you a 441 production off of an 88.2 harvested acreage. Use a 440 carry in for this last report, even though it has, you know, 445. So 440 is being pretty conservative. Keep pretty much the same usage of about a 441 usage. It's a little higher, actually. I kind of rounded it up a little bit. And to my surprise, it leads you with a 750 carry out for the 17-18 crop, which is not overwhelmingly enthusiastic. If you take that yield down to 48, you're looking at about 600. But the acres is that's a big acreage number. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I think we all know that the curious thing is going to be the corn bean spread between the two, which was normally about a 2.4-2.5. I mean, there's a possibility that we could see, you know, $4 corn, $4.50 corn, and still have $9 beans. So it's going to be interesting to see. That's where all the smart guys are trying to figure out where we'll be at for this next marketing year.
Well, you're at 750. You think you really have $9 beans? I mean, we've got a 445 carry out at the moment and a projection of 955. That's a midpoint for this year.
I mean, I'm trying to be optimistic here, Todd. No, I mean, by all means, no, it shouldn't. But I will disclaimer that by saying, you know, 3 years ago, if somebody would have told me we had a 2.3, 2.4, corn carryout, we wouldn't have 375 board either. But you know, it's difficult to tell. And I think, you know, somewhere along the line here, these commodities have a tendency to be in relationship with one another. So I'm going to look optimistically and say, you know, if we can have 4 or 4.50 corn, I can see $9, you know, nine and a half. I can see, you know, steady bean prices.
I suppose a couple of things, Chip Nellinger, working in favor of soybeans would be the biofuels advanced part of the RFS. And the move to the advanced biofuels and the consumption that will be needed, though that depends, I think, some on the ability to produce and mostly crush that many beans in order to meet that need. And then, of course, this week, and this one always comes back up, they put the tax credit back in place, or at least put forward some legislation that would put that dollar a gallon tax credit back in place for biodiesel. So all of those things are there that would work in favor of soybeans going into the coming year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the take home for me. I agree. I mean, if you look back and think, you know, boy, beans having a 400 plus million bushel carryout, and we're still trading, you know, essentially $9.50 on the futures. It's kind of a head scratcher. But the take home is both from the renewable fuels side, massive soy meal demand, Excellent record, you know, soybean export demand. China really driving a lot of that. Even with bigger crops in both hemispheres, we're still using a record amount. In fact, we're probably going to see on this upcoming May crop report, the USDA having to increase old crop bean exports just a little bit to maybe tighten up old crop bean carry a little bit. But yeah, it's kind of a new era, and not from prices, just from a sheer demand side. I mean, we are using record amounts of corn, record amounts of beans, and, you know, we're producing big amounts, but the world's swallowing that up, and which is going to drive volatility, not just over the next few months, but the next few years. The market's going to be much more subject to massive swings just on little hiccups in production potential out of each hemisphere. So, you know, it doesn't mean we're going to stay at $9.50. We could easily push that well lower by fall. But I don't think this world demand led by China is going to go away overnight. If anything, it's probably going to continue to slowly grow as we go forward in time.
Kurt, anything to add on the soybeans?
Yeah, well, one thing we've not seen is the cancellations on a large scale. I mean, the guys mentioned that we just continue to see this demand stay forward, and we're moving it. You know, there was concerns about moving beans out of the southern hemisphere, but they're moving. Brazilian farmers a little bit tight holders here. But even when we look at the upcoming deliveries, they're looking at almost zero bean deliveries, no meal deliveries. And, you know, we're talking some fairly large carryout estimates. So I wonder if the demand curve has shifted here and we just can't look at a past history and see big carryout and lower prices. I mean, yeah, it's going to keep a lid on things. We could drift lower, but it may suggest we won't visit that $7 or $8 level as we move forward here.
Sean Maurer, we know from the USDA's acreage report that there was a shift in soybean acres in the Western Corn Belt. In your area, did producers decide that they'll be planting more soybeans this year?
It feels like it will be kind of like a 50-50 rotation.
Oh, and how different is that? I would think you would be 60-40, maybe even 70-30 in the past.
It'll probably be going to slide, gain probably 5-10% more beans.
All right, so let's get a final word from each of you as we wrap up this April 27 edition of Commodity Week. Greg Ginder, I'll start with you. Your final thoughts for the day.
Sure. Going forward, it's going to be interesting to see how Iowa gets planted. It seems like they've had one day to plant, one day of rain, and one day to dry out and rinse and repeat. So it'll be interesting to see what the government has as far as Iowa's planting progress. Looking forward to the weather, it looks like they have a little bit wider window, and we know that they can plant at a pretty breakneck pace if they get 3 or 4 days. So that'll be the interesting points for next week.
Kurt Kimmel?
Grain option volatility is still relatively low, so it's actually in a zone on some of these strategies. It's a buying opportunity because there's something going to happen down the road, just when and where.
Chip Nellinger.
Well, I think it's important to get refocused on the markets and the potential for big volatility. Just like last June, rewind and put yourself back in last June. The uncertainty is going to be what causes a rally. And that makes it tough because if it's uncertain for the market, it means it's uncertain in your farm and your backyard as well. So now's the time to be making those plans on what you're going to do if we have a big rally. What are you going to do if we have a 30-cent setback first? The time is right now to plan that and be ready for the market, whatever happens in the future.
And finally, Sean Maurer, thank you so much for joining us and giving us an overview of what's been happening in your part of the world. And we appreciate you taking some time with us today.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling me and giving me the chance here. So it was good listening and visiting with you guys.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our panelists today have been Greg Ginder from FC Stone. He's out of Chesterfield, Missouri. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, with special guest Sean Maurer. He's with the Northern Country Cooperative out of Stacyville, Iowa. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.